Life call to order, the meeting of the West Lafayette Community School Corporation, regular meeting of the Board of School Trustees. I know there was a discrepancy in the German Courier saying the meeting was to begin at 7, but it was posted that the meeting would be at 6:30, as it usually is, and...
We did fax the agenda to...
To the German Courier.
Or email.
Email it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're just going to go ahead and get some of the stuff done. First item on the agenda is the approval of the revised agenda.
So moved.
Mrs. Tarpick, second by Mrs. Springer. Discussion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Okay, the move. The minutes of the special board meeting are not available as yet. Okay. So we'll just table that. Should we move to table that, someone? Andy?
I'll move.
Anderson?
Second.
I'll move that, yes.
Moved by Mrs. Anderson, seconded by Mr. Karpik, that we table the approval of the minutes of the April 29th meeting. No one has signed up to speak. Concerning current agenda items, has anyone changed his or her mind at this time and wish to speak? Unfinished business, Rocky?
No.
New business, reduction in force. Rocky?
Well, last Wednesday we were hoping that the Senate and the House would reach a budget deal and we would know what the funding formula would be, but that did not happen. And so now everything's on hold. We don't know what the 2010 or the 2011 funding formula will be. Also, that stops stimulus money. Federal stimulus money can't come to the state from the federal government until our legislators get a budget done. So that's an issue. We were hoping that we would receive up to $150,000 in stimulus money. So that's an issue that we're facing. Also, keep in mind that we have yet to receive our budget order for this year. We are still living on an advertised budget, and Connie and Mike have spoken with the DLGF, and they don't know when the budget order for this year is going to be. So
They don't have it?
Nope.
No.
We are shooting in the dark.
They've not even reviewed it.
Well, Connie.
They've not even reviewed our budget yet for our school.
For the current year that we're operating under.
Right, so that's the one that we voted on last September.
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And as you might recall, last year we didn't get our budget order until October. And that's one of the reasons we were borrowing so much money. So there are a variety of things going on. It's not unique to West Lafayette. I received this from Indiana Education Insight. More than 100 Fort Wayne community school teachers are receiving layoff notices, double what was originally projected due to the budget and the House not reaching a deal on the state budget. 23 teachers in Southwest Allen County, 26 teachers in East Chicago, over 300 teachers in Indianapolis Public Schools. The list goes on and on and on. 70 teachers in Anderson. The crackling that everyone is hearing throughout the state is our school districts facing this situation, and school districts are being hurt. But that's the reality that we face, and I am appreciative of our elementary teachers who gave us an opportunity to at least delay the decision for 1 week, because we did think through one of our legislators that we might have some better news about our funding formula by the end of the day on Wednesday or on Thursday, and of course that didn't happen. With all of that, it's my somber duty to recommend that we do preemptive RIFs until all budget factors are known. I'm recommending to the School Board of Trustees that the non-permanent contracts of the following non-permanent teachers, first and second year elementary teachers, be non-renewed for the 2009-2010 school year because of budgetary constraints. And those would be Yvonne Abrahamson, Morgan Acey, Teresa Hollis, Emily Poole, David Prue, Laura Smith, Cassandra Stafford, and Mary Gibbs Westbrook.
We need a motion.
So moved.
Second. Moved by Mr. Karpik, seconded by Mrs. Anderson. Discussion.
Just to clarify it, because all the numbers sort of run together. Unless the WGL, unless they review the budget and approve it, we don't get any release of funds, correct?
Correct.
So are we in a situation where we're going to have to do TAWs?
We're getting ready to talk about that tonight.
I wondered. Okay. And as far as I know, the tax, property tax bills are not going out until July. Is that right?
But remember, the property taxes for this current cycle don't have that great of impact on general fund. Our general fund now being driven by the total, by 99.9% of the state budget. Mm-hmm. And the state budget isn't done. And when the state budget isn't done, we don't get a funding formula.
Right.
And so we don't have a funding formula to determine what our estimates will be for 2010-2011.
It's probably conservative to say that the governor is not going to call a special session until probably the end of June.
That's what we're hearing.
Because he's going to wait for a couple more forecasts coming out.
That's what we're hearing.
Okay.
So how much time do we have before, let's say we're able to call teachers back, how much time do we have?
We have as much time as 2 years, because the RIF's reductions in force for the contract teachers will be on a callback list for 2 years. But of course, we don't want to wait 2 years. We want something to happen before school starts.
Right.
Our problem is going to be what happens downstate. And I will say it again until I'm blue in the face. People that have power over school districts aren't held responsible for its outcomes. And the people that are held responsible for its outcomes, they don't have any power over it. You know, we're at the mercy of what the legislators do. And we have to wait for them to finish their process. It's unfortunate. It's ridiculous.
Well, I mean, I would suggest that this RIF is really about more about unknown factors versus known factors. And I think your motion included budget constraints or budgetary constraints. We actually don't know with any certainty what we're dealing with. We don't have a budget back from the state. We're looking at some forecasted expenditures that we don't have absolute certainty about, most notably the health insurance premium. And so what I'm suggesting is the motion is more to, the RIF is due to the fact that we don't understand all of the constraints we're facing at this point in time.
Well, to me, not knowing is a constraint.
And well,
that's
it is.
That's why I said a preemptive RIF until all unknown factors are known.
And so, just to clarify, we can't wait any longer. We have to provide this notice and go forward with this action before the 29th of May. Is that right?
Correct. Before the end of the school year. Now, we already have an agreement in place with our RIF teachers that notification through a waiver has to be by tomorrow, May 7th, because we originally had it that we were going to make that decision last Wednesday, but we did waivers because one of our legislators asked us if we could delay it. So we created waivers, and I hate keeping these folks hanging out there on a limb before a decision is made. I had several of them say, we just need a decision. And so the decision needs to be made so that we all can move forward, and then we know what we're facing and what we have to come up with to try to resolve these budgetary issues for the people that are RIF'd.
And we have several things we're still working on, but legally we have to move on this. Even though we have several things, they're not finalized because, again, the budget constraints.
So we're painted in a corner.
Yeah, we're in a corner.
Well, and if things change, we can call teachers back at any time.
Yeah.
Correct.
Right up until school starts.
As soon as possible, yeah.
Even after school starts.
Right, right. I know I'd asked you about this earlier, and I remember we did have some information on this, but just to kind of refresh my memory, how big an impact are we looking at as far as class sizes at the elementary grades?
Well, depending upon how you shift,
20%?
There can be a shift.
Right.
And
right.
Depending upon how you shift, we could see kindergarten, first grade classes in the low to mid 20s. Mm. And you might could get that down a little bit if you did some shifting from Happy Hollow, from the junior high to Happy Hollow. Probably second and third grade might be as high as the mid to upper 20s. And fourth through sixth grade might be in the upper 20s to low 30s.
So this is the part of this is going to depend on our enrollment.
Correct. And we don't know what that'll be too.
Right. And first grade, those are always up in the air.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to say to all of you teachers who will receive the RIF notice, my first 5 years I taught here, I received a RIF notice. Sometimes I wasn't recalled until August. And I know what you're feeling. I know exactly what you're feeling. So.
Also, before you make take a vote on this, let me read to you some things I've received from Ron Alting and Sheila Klinker, because we are doing everything we can to try to get the funding formula adjusted for our school district. And our team went to visit Senators Kimling and Alting and Dylan, who work on the funding formula. And this was a message they got from Senator Alting. I won't read to you his opening remarks, but he says, "The base number Senator Kennedy continued to elaborate on for West Lafayette School District is totally unacceptable in future budgets. There's no way we or any other school corporation with little or no complexity index can survive on that base number." And that base number is the number that's changing by $1,100 per student. He says, "I understand and believe that clearly. The meeting was not the time or place to debate that. I have begun discussions with Senator Hirschman and colleagues on how we can add high-achieving schools to that complexity index. Diane Sauter said it best. It also takes extra effort from teachers to teach our state's brightest kids. I will carry a bill or do whatever we need to do for us to continue this dialogue through the process." And then he goes on and talks about some other things that he's going to do. Then I have a handwritten note from Sheila Klinker saying that she's spoken in length with Senator Hirschman and members of the Fiscal Policy and Appropriations Committee. They have promised that they would work very hard to change the funding formula as needed, as much as possible, to help the West Lafayette School District because of our complexity index. So I think we have the intention, or at least our concerns are there, and of course it's up to them on what they can and can't get done with their colleagues. So we are working very diligently to try to resolve those funding formula issues.
Any further discussion?
I have a question.
Please. Yes.
Rocky, help us understand, I guess, once again, because we've gone through this before, but I think it's helpful to revisit it. Why we're focusing on a two-year sort of initiative when I understand the statute or the legal requirements, the notice and so forth, for the upcoming school year, but we're looking at an initiative that's got a two-year reduction goal, and we're going to know more whether it's good news or bad news sometime, maybe late summer. And so I think, I'm wondering how much of this initiative is, we're really kind of buying time until we know more, and what is, what's the aspect of it that is really a sort of a permanent cost reduction focus? And I guess maybe my question or comment isn't clear, but I'm wondering why we're looking out 2 years when we're probably going to know more within the span of 3 or 4 months.
Well, I think when you say 2 years, it might
be... And why can't it be phased in, I guess?
The 2 years that I've been referring to has to do with the two-year biennium budget. Mm-hmm. And the budget that we will receive from the state, more likely than not, will be 2 years, and we will know the funding formula for 2010 and 2011. When these numbers were all being put together, we had a projected funding formula for two 2 years. Mm-hmm. Both of those years showed a decrease. Each year, 2010 and 2011, under the proposed budget that, or proposed funding formula, showed a 1.1% decrease in 2010 and the same in 2011. $80 per student less in 2010, $120 less in 2011.
And that under a more favorable set of state budget
assumptions
that are likely to...
Yeah, now we're being told, hey guys, all bets are off because the forecasts are coming in even worse. Mm-hmm. And so there is talk that the funding formula that we originally had that we were concerned about could even get much more severe. So until you know those hard numbers, we have to aim high, because if it comes in much worse than what we anticipated, there's nothing more that we can do from a certified staff point of view. And so then the only other options that we have, classified staff, programming, anything that we can find locally to tighten the belt, if you will. And if we have a catastrophic event, one catastrophic event could cause us to end in the red by December of 2009. And we can't do that by law.
But you've made a lot of progress in the last year in dropping costs down.
We have.
In other areas, utilities, many other areas. Why could we not have this same conversation a year from today and be looking at half of these staff positions?
Well, you could have this conversation a year from today with even more staff reductions. What we're doing is what I'm calling preemptive. Preemptive means that we're going to make sure that we are balancing our budget so that we're living above our means. If we start spending cash, we start spending more than we're taking in, very soon we won't have any cash balance, because we have a very small cash balance right now. And we are not sure how this funding formula is going to come in at the end of the day. And we're also predicting a 3% inflationary cost with operations. Our health insurance isn't going down, our utility costs aren't going down, maybe our usage is going down, but the cost, you know, all these costs are going to continue to rise, and we only get our funding from one source right now, and that's from the state for general fund. We can't decrease production, we can't increase prices like a business can. We're at the mercy of the state, so that's why in our next conversation we're going to talk about other cost reductions and revenue enhancement activities, because I think that we've got to take control of our destiny, and we've got to come up with some other things that will prevent us from having to do this ever again.
Well, in looking at the April 30th report that Connie put together, I mean, across the entirety of the funding for all the funds for the school corporation, there's about $8 million in cash balance. So, you know, it's a shame, really, that we don't have more flexibility to address what may be, you know, it may end up being a temporary sort of crisis. I mean, you just don't know.
You know, and unfortunately, we're in siloed funding. So I can't take $600,000 or $700,000 out of capital projects and move it to general fund. I wish I could. I can't take the debt service, and there's quite a bit of money in debt service because we're waiting to make our payments. You know, we have a $1.8 million payment coming up, so you know that cash balance is pretty high right now until we make our semi-annual payment to the junior senior high school. But that cash payment, or that money, can't go to general fund. And that's another issue that I've been discussing. Break down the silos, so if we do have some cash balances in other places, we can move that to general fund.
And give us more local control. We have no local control, you know. That's what we need.
So even the interest that is earned on those separate funds can't be moved. If the fund earns it, it has to stay in that fund.
No, that's the only exception. If we earn interest, we can move that in general fund, but our interest is at a quarter percent.
A quarter of a percent, and we'd ask at the last meeting what we had earned. Our average per month is a little over $1,700 that we're earning in interest, and that's it. That includes also WBC's funds that are mixed in with ours.
Because I remember in the past, you know, in the, what is it, 4.5, whatever years we've been doing this, that, you know, back in the day, we had some serious interest income in some of these funds because they did hold, like, CPF. and debt service in particular, because they had significant balances and the interest rates were higher.
Yeah, this is the worst I've ever seen our interest rates.
And there's nothing we can do with that interest rate. There's no place we can go to do better.
You can do a little shopping, but then you have to go through changing
your monies. We don't have that high of a balance in any fund that we don't have to sometimes. The cash is there, or we get paid once a month by the state, so that goes up and down based on payroll. So
your stipulations aren't there on.
Okay.
Yeah, it's tough right now.
So this preemptive eight teacher right now, what we're hoping is that this will take care of 2009, 2010, and 2010, 2011.
Can't promise you 2010, 2011.
Something drastic comes along.
Yeah. This really, I think this gets us, prepares us for a possible hefty insurance increase if we have it. And if you didn't check your email, ISTA Insurance was just taken over by United Healthcare. And there's some financial questions going on about that. And if United Healthcare has to raise costs to cover their insolvency or whatever you want to call it, I think our projection of $362,000 insurance increase for January 2010 might be closer to the money than everybody anticipates. So it depends on what our projections are. All we're trying to do is to guesstimate what we might end up seeing at the end of the day with the funding formula, what we may end up seeing with the insurance costs in January, what we may end up seeing in increased costs throughout the school year, and not having the funding formula, it's a shot in the dark. It really is a shot in the dark, and it's a shot in the dark because we don't even have our current budget.
I wonder to what extent our accounting software has the capability to do cash flow forecasts, because I think, the way I tend to come at these sorts of things in my own practice is really trying to come up with sets of assumptions and really try and bracket what you think the potential outcomes could be. And I know that they may be difficult in this case with respect to state funding. But we can, it seems to me, have a sense of looking at the range of possible outcomes and having a forward-looking cash flow forecast for the general fund and seeing how that shakes out against the liquidity position of that fund from time to time, so that we know we have a sense going forward and looking forward if we're going to have to take measures of this nature, that we have a better sense of what the likely impact is going to be. I know you do, and I'm sure Connie does in your head. I mean, you're around this data daily. I mean, I trust the fact that you have a very well-informed perspective on it and good judgment regarding it. But I think for my own satisfaction and maybe the rest of the board, it would be helpful to have a forward-looking forecast. I don't know if that's an unusual.
Well, remember when we met in executive session and Mike Turner gave you a forecast?
Yeah.
I mean, that was what that was all about. He was giving you training on the budget, and he gave you an extension of the forecast based upon the assumption that it was a flat line funding formula. Now, we're being told it may be worse than a flat line funding formula. So everything that we have put in place based upon previous information could be faulty.
Right. That was back in October?
No. That was just a month ago. Just a month ago. So, those forecasts are there. That's how we came up with all of this. We just didn't sit down and say, hey, let's, what Mike and Connie did, they looked at what happened last year, what's the historical data, what are the projections for this year, what's the funding formula picture look like, and what is it that we might get from the state from the old funding formula, and then all of those numbers dictated how much we needed to come up with, and that's where we got our $750,000 to $800,000 savings. Also, that occurred in the work session April 15th. April 15th, he went through all of that again. Those were the projections. That was the line item analysis that we did to create these assumptions. And so I remind all of you, too, that when we create these assumptions, things could change from day to day and week to week. For instance, the state will call us and say, Connie, the tuition payment that we've been giving to all school districts is now being reduced by 1.2%, and that happened last year. They just called us out of the blue in the last 7 months of our year last year. They reduced the funding for all schools automatically without even a warning. So, you know, the dynamic that we find ourselves in from a financial standpoint is unlike anything that you'll ever see in any type of situation. It is a moving target, and so if we don't have enough prepared, if we don't prepare ourselves, then if we miss, then we'll have to turn our keys over to the state if we're expending more than we're bringing in.
I think in a period of maximum uncertainty, though, that's where you have to be doing those sorts of revised forecasts fairly often.
Yep.
And it would just be helpful to get that information frequently.
Sure.
Frequent updates with that kind of information.
Yeah, our problem right now is that we don't know what the new assumption is. You know, with the state not doing the budget and with the funding formula, not knowing what the funding formula is, I can't give you
a... You can pick a number here and a number here, though, within some range of reason and say it's going to probably fall within... This range.
Yeah. Our current assumption is a flatline budget. That's what we're operating right now under, is a flatline budget.
With anticipation that it's going to be lower than that. We have to assume that they're going to just not treat us very fairly.
Right. And so if that happens, I mean, what does that mean?
Well, that means that we are going to have to find other ways to reduce costs.
So that's what I'm saying. So quantifying the exercise and keeping it current.
Sure.
And I think, David, our strategic plan will help deal with some of this. When we get around to talking about that later.
Okay. There are no easy answers, and every school district is going through this. You know, everyone is making assumptions, and those assumptions may be correct. We may miss them, but as most business managers will tell you, and people that have been around this a long time, that you've got to do more than enough with the hope that if you have a catastrophic event, you've prepared yourself to be braced for that.
I've kind of been operating on this in terms of crystallizing the assumptions.
Yep.
And the one item that's on there, less projected new money from funding formula, it's $234,000.
That was last year's funding formula.
And so you're saying that's flat. That's probably not going to be received.
No, what we're saying is to use that $234,000 is based upon last year's funding formula, the 2008 funding
formula. So if it rode right with 08, if 09's came out to be equal to 08, we'd get $234,000.
Depends on what your ADM is.
Additional.
It depends on what your ADM is, but if our ADM grew like it did by 10 students or 10 and a half students last year, yes. That would be the case. But I don't know where the state's going to come up with additional growth money for all school districts.
Do they apply the de-ghoster factor?
Well, that's all off the table now.
Right.
See, that's what we're facing. We don't know what the new funding formula is going to look like. I could have told you under the old one or what they were proposing.
Well, what I was getting at is if we don't receive at least what we had in 08, that 234 goes away. And that gets added to the cost we have to make up, which puts it over $1 million.
We're in big trouble. Right. And that's what Mike, you know, told everyone. We're assuming, we're making an assumption that we're going to get that total $234,000 new money. If we don't, that's another one, you know, that we'll get hit with, and we got to figure that one out.
So some of this is about keeping the door open, if you will,
yes,
to control costs. And if we don't take this measure, in other words, the preemptive RIF, we won't have that option.
Right.
Correct.
And since we are talking about general fund, and that's the largest component of general fund, that's what we have to dial in on.
Correct.
Okay.
You know, there's only so much cost control you can do and basically stay in business.
Correct.
I mean, if we were a manufacturing company, we would lay off, and then we would close our doors because we couldn't afford to pay our suppliers. We couldn't afford to, we'd basically be taking bankruptcy as a school corporation. That's really not something I think is a viable option. I'm really surprised that the fact that the legislative stalemate has basically left all the school corporations in the entire state of Indiana hanging out to dry, mm-hmm. waiting with no funding, on top of the delays in the appropriations that was the problem we've had over the last 2 years anyway. Okay. So compounding that, we are now getting, so we're not only going to pay you late, we're not even going to tell you what you might have gotten if it wasn't late.
Correct.
This is unbelievable.
Correct.
And so we're not only looking at the black box of we don't know where our funding's going to be, we don't know where we have to cut, how much we have to cut, even if we can cut that much, but we're also going to probably be looking at significant interest expenses again if they don't get their act together and start getting the appropriations out like we need to be, which is a whole different problem than right. the funding. It's just getting the funding we're supposed to get to us.
Right.
So we're rolling into a whole other cycle for the next school year of what did we spend in interest last year on all of our tax anticipation warrants?
Over $340,000
in interest.
Over $340,000.
Totally wasted just because they couldn't get us our money when we were supposed to get our money.
Correct.
It's like the whole system is broken.
Correct.
And well, so I don't understand, why is no one hearing about this? Why isn't this front page headlines? It's like nobody even hears about this except at the school board meetings. I don't understand it.
Well, we have been trying to get it out in the forefront. Remember all the public meetings that we've had. Actually, we started making a lot of noise about this about a year and a half ago. We've had a public meeting in February, had a public meeting in March, had another public meeting in April, or 1st of April.
Yeah.
Again, the people that have the power over schools aren't held responsible, and the people that have the responsibility over schools don't have the power.
Well, here's one of the things that's most frustrating is what you said. We have to borrow money and pay interest just to keep ourselves afloat. And there's no way, there's no way to regain that interest. It's gone.
Well, the challenge that we have to keep in mind going into special session is the General Assembly's got to find some way of removing an additional $1 billion out of the budget. And he's specifically targeted education, or he's going to veto the bill. That's the long and short of it.
That's fine.
They got to find some way to narrow in to make him happy to sign off on it.
IPS is predicting class sizes of as much as 45 students in elementary schools.
What does K-12 education again represent as a percentage of the state budget?
I think 52%.
It's over 50%.
So they really have little choice.
Yeah.
I think there are a couple elements to this too. I mean, we're facing an obviously immediate financial challenge to deal with this issue, and it has to be worked through. But there's an informational component as well to what is happening. And so you have to take note of what this sort of represents from the long term. I mean, it's hard to think about the long term when you're dealing with a very immediate issue. But
immediate and emotional issue for
a difficult issue. But it's the analysis that's been done is pretty suggestive of the fact that these trend lines in terms of state support for the school corporation anyway have been forming for a while. So you have to say, what are you going to do to it? What's in your power to really arrest that sort of trend? There's really no, you don't have any power to do that.
Yeah, because the overriding, I guess, factor is they're trying to equalize,
right.
And that hurts us.
Right.
That hurts us.
And it's
going to keep hurting us.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with the concept of equity in education.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if the state has that sort of objective, I can't argue with it. I mean, in a philosophical sense, because know, education is supposed to be an opportunity creator, I suppose. And when we fall out of that, you know, set of institutions, and so, you know, it's difficult to ask for and receive special treatment. But,
I could argue with it a little bit, because the socking money into a school or a school corporation that is doing a poor job will not make that school corporation do a good job. It just doesn't work.
Here's a paragraph.
And that's where Gary in Indianapolis are so powerful in give us the money, give us the money, give us the money.
I agree.
And it doesn't solve the problem at all.
It's hard to get that ship, however, moving in a different direction given the political process.
Well, and that's again what Rocky had said. It's the people making those decisions who think that's the answer to the problem.
Right. Legislators that are sitting in the financial committees, by and large, represent Title I schools.
Yes.
And they are the lobbying power there. And, mm-hmm. and that's, you've got to maneuver somehow. That's been our biggest challenge, is trying to maneuver around those people.
Well, here's a paragraph from Sheila Klinker's letter to me. West Lafayette schools are seeing a reduction in monies funded by the state general fund because of recent changes to the calculation of the school funding formula. In an effort to increase funding to disadvantaged students, the school funding formula places a greater emphasis on the complexity index to determine funding levels. The index is essentially a relative measure of the number of students who qualify for federal free and reduced lunch programs. Through the use of the complexity index, the Assembly hopes to provide a quality education to students in all areas of the state, regardless of their locality's socioeconomical strength. I do understand that.
Yeah.
But I also believe that you can't legislate equality, because every school district is different, every school district has its strengths, every school district has its needs, and so, you know, there's not a way, in my opinion, to legislate equality through a funding formula.
Any further discussion?
We're gonna later on in the agenda. I mean, we're talking about initiatives that sort of take matters more into our own hands. And I just reemphasize. I mean, that's the information.
That's the key.
In this whole situation.
So we'll have more opportunities to vent later on in the meeting.
All right. Okay.
And it's not me to call the question.
We didn't vote on this yet.
No, reluctantly, all in favor of moving on the reduction in force recommendations from Rocky, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Cost reduction, revenue enhancement from your executive summary. I know we've heard some of this before, but we need to hear it again. It needs to be reported again. We need to keep having informational meetings.
Yeah, well, this is a little different. This is now that we've got the certified staff codes met, because we had to follow Indiana code. I think that there are other ideas that we need to also consider that could help us with callback of teachers, but this is going to take a little time, a little study, and so some of the things that I think that we need to discuss, we have classified staff that we need to consider, and I've been speaking with the administrators about what can we do internally in buildings to look at classified staff or non-certified staff. I call them classified staff, but some folks use the term non-certs. We, of course, have reduced in force at the central office one payroll position, so Connie, Misty, and Vicki have taken on extra duties. Speaking with Mrs. Bowers, we're looking at the possibility of 2.5 paraprofessionals and one tutor. Happy Hollow, we're looking at...
Being eliminated.
Looking at Happy Hollow, two paraprofessionals. Junior, senior high school, one paraprofessional, one secretary. These non-certified staff, the savings is about $130,000 if we would consider these. And this is just conversation for right now, for discussion purposes. I think another part of it is extracurricular. And there have been lots of questions about what we're going to do about extracurricular and whether it should be pay to play. And I want to make it very clear, and if the newspaper's here, maybe they can put it in. At the meeting, March 26, whatever it was, I did not endorse the pay-to-play concept. That was a two-minute question. And the paper's headline was, West Lafayette considers athletes pay-to-play $350 to $400. I specifically said that I was not in favor of that concept. The reason I'm not in favor of it is because you'll have the haves and the have-nots, and I want to make sure that every child has an opportunity. So I want to make that very clear. But I think that there are some things that we can do to tighten extracurricular programming. And I've been speaking with Brock, and Brock's been working with his coaches and looking at the athletic training services, and he's identified the possibility of 18 assistant coaches positions that we might be able to reduce in force if we know that we have met the safety concerns and have the enough coaches for those particular positions. Just from those 18 positions, and you know, it's not a lot, but it helps, $29,066 from 18 assistant coaches positions. And then Brock, bless his heart, has been trying to renegotiate the athletic training services, and a reduction in athletic training services during the winter months when we have less of a need to have two trainers. He thinks that we could get a $15,000 savings from that. So a total combination of those two events is $44,126. If we could implement some things like that, and we were to capture stimulus money, and the assumptions come in that we're at a flat line, then that gives us an opportunity to call back staff. You know, that's a position. Some other things, though, for long-term, because we really have to take control of our destiny, and I do think that we need to talk about revenue-generating programs. There is a petition going around about a local referendum, and considering a local referendum for school district, a study of it. Let me emphasize that, a study of it. Also sustaining our staff through endowments, through gifts and donations. I think most of us, and not all of us, have been to fundraising parties. I don't know how many school districts in the state are doing this, but since we've had three fundraising parties, and the total amount raised so far out of three parties is a little over $34,000. And so I think that's very good for just three meetings of about 50 to 60 people. And more parties are being developed. And so as we capture donations through those revenue generating programs in the short term, that can help call back staff. In the long term, we need to come up with, in my opinion, teacher endowments. I think the foundation, parent councils, parent groups, whichever group wants to do these kinds of things. If we can capture dollars like what Purdue does, Purdue gets $1 million and then they use the interest to help endow a chair, endow a position. I think those things that we need to discuss. Also, estate planning. I think that we're missing the boat on getting to alumni about estate planning and leaving a portion of their estate to the school district. To date, I think we've had two estate type of issues coming back to our school district. We had a 1934 alum passed away, and she left $15,000 to the school district. And then we just had another contact about the possibility of an estate planning. So I think estate planning might be something that we would want to discuss and consider. We also need to go look at every position, outsourcing, school foundation governance, all these things. For instance, the RFP for the food service. If that comes back and they take care of the lunchroom aides, that's $45,000 that we save. And so if our assumptions are correct, that we're flatlined, we get the stimulus money, we get the $234,000 from last year's fund or from the funding formula, our assumptions are holding true, then that gives us an opportunity to call back staff members. So there's a lot of things that are in the works, and a couple more things we're going to talk about here that I think has great potential to help us take control of our future.
When would we move on the extracurricular positions and the non-certified positions?
I would think that after I think at the next board meeting, it would be very prudent for us to consider those positions, because I want to have additional conversations with the WLEA through discussion, because some of these things are change in working conditions, so those are discussable items. So I want to discuss those things and fine-tune them with the WLEA through discussion, and also work again with the administration to ensure that we've identified the correct areas, if you will, so that we don't have undue stress, if you will, in the program.
Mm-hmm. Would this be for the summer of 2009 or 2010, just coaching and...
It would start for this upcoming school year, 2009-2010 school year. Okay, so it would start this summer.
This summer it would be. So it would start affecting like the soccer teams, yes, and the football teams now, right, basically. Okay.
But you know, there is a duty to discuss, and that's why I'm not asking for a decision tonight, because I want to take this to teacher discussion and discuss these things with them, as well as continue my discussions with the principals, and then bring it back to everyone and let everyone hear what the groups that are affected by this are saying, and we can fine-tune it and finalize things.
Rocky, is it your expectation, the board's expectation, that out of the strategic planning process will emerge some financial goal,
yes,
with regard to all of these sorts of measures that will have, you know, a pretty clear target in mind and some sort of time phasing aspect associated with that, so that we know what we're going to be shooting at?
Yeah, I think there will be goals. There'll be instruction, curriculum goals, facility goals, financial goals that have come out of the strategic plan.
Address
that a little bit.
The Save Our Schools gatherings, you say you've raised $34,000. Do we know what those funds are going to be used for specifically?
Yes, 100% to call back staff.
Call back staff. Okay, so the donors know that.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Yep. And we've been having some very good meetings, and you know, I think that there's great interest in what we're trying to do. There's a celebration of the quality of our school district, and many folks are wanting to step up to the plate, not only for the short term, but I've received lots of requests from patrons that don't have kids in school to help us with some other initiatives that we've been talking about.
Yeah. I think one of the also important thing, and two-thirds of those meetings were really with the majority of the people that were in that category of not having kids in school. And I think we have to remember, this is a long, even though we have a very acute situation here, this is a process that is going to take some time. But the key also is, I think the thing that's most surprising is how surprised everybody is in that room. That when they hear the reality of what we're dealing with, we all know this, unfortunately, because we look at it a lot closer, and certainly everyone in the audience as well. But it's important that the education process takes time, and we don't have a lot of time. I understand that, but this is the first step, and I think it's an important step.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's just for information to answer any questions or thoughts or other suggestions that you might have. I think it's a worthy endeavor to explore these other options.
Shall we move on? Preschool early childhood concept.
This is one of those revenue enhancing programs that we've been discussing for off and on. And this is Randy Sly. Randy's with the Glass, and Kim Bauer, our principal at Kim Bauer's principal at Cumberland. And they are going to present to you a concept that they have been working on that I'm very excited about.
Talking about preparing today's children for tomorrow's world, doing a preschool program, partnering with Glass to move us forward for a lot of reasons. Why a partnership? Glass currently has a growing preschool enrollment, and they're outgrowing their space. doing something together at Cumberland would allow us and GLASS to better meet the needs of parents and students in the northern part of our county. And we already have a strong, well-established relationship. We share several other programs throughout the county with GLASS, and it goes very well. And we are ready to continue to build relationships with parents, teachers, experts, to benefit children as they prepare for kindergarten. What type of program are we looking at? We're looking at a preschool program that welcomes young children and provides programming for the individual needs of students. And our curriculum will be focused on the essential school readiness skills and the core standards recommended by the Indiana Department of Education. No additional licensure is needed for our school corporation to have a preschool. What will students learn? Lots of things. Social emotional skills, personal care skills, physical skills, and of course, academic skills.
I like the how you did the animation.
Pushing that in there.
It was very nice.
And why now? Cumberland will have two rooms available for the 2009-2010 school year because the state did not fund full-day kindergarten as was planned and anticipated.
Imagine that.
We were ready. And we're so ready for something. With the current budget questions looming about the state budget in the next few years, it may be likely that full-day kindergarten will not be funded through the state in the near future. And this program, a combination, it has the potential to become a revenue-generating resource for West Lafayette schools.
I like that one.
What benefits would we have? With the help and support from GLASS, Cumberland could pilot additional preschool classes that will allow for an exciting new preschool opportunities for our local families in the future. Additional benefits include we've got space that's ready to go with minor modifications. We have the potential to have additional classroom support for students in art and PE. We have a venue for support groups for parents and access to experts in various fields. And we have speech and language therapy available right at Cumberland. And some of these things are things that other preschools are not able to provide. How will the program run? Right now we're thinking like this. GLASS has two classes ready to begin in the fall. A morning class, 9 to 11:30, and a p.m. class, 12:15 to 2:45. Pilot classes for Cumberland, which we would have to have 15 to open a class, opening in the fall of 2010, being announced at Kindergarten Roundup next February, having an advanced preschool class, 5 days in the morning, age 3-4, going from 8:30 to 11, and a pre-kindergarten class, 5 days, an afternoon class, age 4-5, and then that would be an afternoon class from 12:30 to 3:15. Those line up with our school day. The GLASS preschool is a half an hour off for busing and for transportation ease and things for parents and for buses and making it flow smoothly. We think that would work. The curriculum foundations we will build upon. Looking at the work of Vygotsky and Piaget and Ames, Gardner, Pink, Montessori, Elkin, Grant, and then of course the National Association for the Education of Young Children and the National Institute of Early Education Research. Looking at that is what we will base our curriculum and activities on, as well as the state standards. And we of course will be child-centered and developmentally appropriate and still provide challenging opportunities for individual student growth. What do we need from you? We need really the recognition that preschool will soon become a normal part of public school education. If you're listening to the federal Secretary of Education Duncan, he's talking about it now. It is part of what's going to be happening, and we need your support of our expansion to partner with GLASS to better prepare today's students for tomorrow's world. Questions?
That's pretty exciting. In association, based on the association with GLASS, would a high percentage of these children in the program be special needs kids?
As far as the classes that would be coming this coming year, yes, those will be primarily special education students. That, that's correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think in the future, though, the integrated class would be probably at least 75% kids, typical peers without any kind of disabilities, and then maybe 25%. I don't think it would ever go beyond that.
Yeah.
And that's pretty comparable to what we have out in the community now when we go into, that's our version of a regular preschool is the community placements like Head Start or Purdue Language Lab and some of those places.
And I would like to pat West Lafayette on the back, the school system. We work very well closely with GLASS and have a very good reputation for dealing with our special needs kids.
Right.
Absolutely.
And we also have each year the transition conferences that Randy puts together for the preschool coming to kindergarten. Over the time that we've been working together, it's really been fun in the last 3 years to do some transitioning at Cumberland, visitations to the preschools, making those transitions much more smooth. And so a lot of our kids that come from GLASS transition beautifully into our classrooms, and they know their teacher that they're going to have. The parents are able to meet the teachers ahead of time, and those kinds of things. And actually, having them in the building would make that even easier than it is right now. We make the arrangements, but it would make it easier for sure. And we also are looking at students that will be in the general education population for the majority of their day. They will be the students that would be in the preschool. Sometimes there are students that need to work for a while in a more self-contained atmosphere before they're able to be in regular education classrooms, and that would not be the exact kind of program that we'd be having at Cumberland.
What kind of certification would be required for the teachers in this program?
Actually, their teaching license, because we're a public school, works for preschool as well. We have made contact with Penn Harris Madison, a school corporation that's had preschool for several years, and they've got a great program going. Of course, a unique school corporation, but we're hoping to go up to visit them as well as we look to create a program outside of what we're doing. I also had been in contact with Daniel Pink, the author of A Whole New Mind, and he has some great things to say and was very complimentary for us to go ahead and use his work to think about basing some of our curriculum and some of the ideas he's written. He's a futurist, and he's written on some things about what 21st century kids will need. Some of you may remember the name because 2 years ago when we went to the 21st Century Schools Conference, it was mentioned, his book, A Whole New Mind, was mentioned at that conference, and he's been gracious in saying use whatever you would like to use, so that's good as well.
And the structure lends itself to the structure recommended in Tough Choices, Tough Times.
Yes.
This could be the beginning of that thinking.
We currently have a couple of preschools already, like over in Mentone. We have two classrooms there in AM and PM that runs 4 days a week. We have several phonology classes that's at Earhart in Miami, and those have been going on for several years now, and things are doing quite well. The opportunity, like at Mentone, being way out in the south end like that, they don't have a lot of early childhood or preschool programs in that area, so typical peers really line up quickly to try to come into that program to just be those typical peers for our students, and that's been a very, very successful. So I really do think preschool, our numbers are just ballooning. When we were over at Burtsfield, I think we were the most we ever were at the end of the year were about 400. We're going to be close to 470 by the end of this school year. And the projections from First Steps, we'll have about anywhere from 25 to 50 summer conferences just to get those folks to add to that. So we really, I think the market is there. And the quality of good preschools, as we all know, When you go to kindergarten, it's not like when we went to kindergarten, just what the expectations are. And you can come into a preschool classroom and you would, I think, be pleasantly surprised of the seriousness that we go towards preparing those students for kindergarten.
I have just a couple questions. So we still currently have a glass speech therapist at Cumberland?
Yes.
Yes.
So that lends itself very well to that whole transition, because I know that's a huge service that a lot of people go through. One question I have, I am still hearing a lot of concerns from parents about the traffic and the coming and going at Cumberland. But that has actually not really been completely resolved, even though we've reconfigured the Benton drop-off and the parking lot and all the stuff we've done. I think this is a great idea, but it's going to impact a lot of people coming and going, because these are half-day kids, and it's not like they come on the bus in the morning and they leave on the bus at night. It's a lot of parent parking, a lot of people walking in and out of the building to pick up and drop off kids. Are we kind of getting a...
Yeah, part of the timing is also very good for when they would begin and when we begin, because we'll begin and be started with our day before they will begin, and that will ease things greatly. The trouble that we have has to do with 10 minutes at the beginning of the day and 10 to 15 minutes at the end of the day, and if we avoid those times, that will make a huge difference. And I think we can do some additional things in terms of tightening up and rearranging some things to accommodate the program, to accommodate parking.
And you have to
do internally
accommodate a lot more parent walking traffic in the building, because people with kids this age, they don't leave them at the door. They walk them to their classroom. They kiss them and cry and hug and carry on for 20 minutes before they leave. So I think we'd have to anticipate a lot of parents in the building that we don't really, we don't really welcome now, but we don't really encourage like we used to at Cumberland, is my understanding. So I think that will definitely be something I think we'll need to address if we do this.
I'm excited about it.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful
idea. As a seed program for something that could become...
Is it too early to tell what kind of dollars opportunity might be?
Yes, it's too early.
we have some assumptions. We have some assumptions.
I hate to do that. Yeah.
It would be positive rather than negative.
We have some assumptions. We also think it'll help our glass budget. You know, there's a variety of things that I think that this could lend itself to. And if this grows, this is one of the reasons why I think we should hold on to Burtsfield. Because this could be a program that could grow, that we could see on site at Burtsfield, and it'll be a revenue-generating program. And again, trying to take control over destiny. We can either sit here and just let things continue on as they do, or we can start inventing some things and letting some things grow and see what we can do internally to help ourselves. And I think this is a great opportunity to pilot it, see how it goes for a year, and see what kind of things we need to do to tweak it and grow this.
And one of the other things is that Glass Preschool also would have openings for students that do not have special needs as well. So I mean, we can entertain those questions that we might get from patrons, especially younger siblings of some children in our school and things like that. So if that comes up in the next few months, that might be something that's able to be worked out as well, because the teacher to student ratio will be very very low, and so I think we have some real potential here.
The student teacher ratio is that one of the primary bases for differentiation? I'm wondering how you differentiate yourself relative to other preschool programs that might be in the area. What would make this one?
Just there used to be caps on preschool developmentally, preschools of 10 max. The caps were taken off as of August 2008, but just obviously for safety reasons and just making sure that you have the proper coverage and you're supporting the students' needs as you should. We, at the maximum we have right now, are 12 in any of our classes, and that would be a certified teacher along with two or three paraprofessionals. And most of our paraprofessionals, we've had the luxury of being close to Purdue, obviously, and so a lot of college kids are trying to upgrade their resume and get their experiences, and so we are really fortunate to have a good working pool. So we that's the problem we have at Linwood currently. We literally are running out of room because for safety reasons, we can't jam any more children in those classrooms. So that's why we're asking to come back to West Lafayette. We obviously, it'd have to pitch a tent over Burnsville now the way it looks, but we hope that we think this would be a good opportunity. And it's we don't think you'll have to absorb all of this. Obviously, we're looking. I know the Lafayette School Corporation, they're reconfiguring Sunnyside, and the following year, I think starting in 2010, the fifth graders in the elementaries will be going to Sunnyside. So we're hoping to get some fifth grade rooms there. So we will eventually get out to other places, but the way we're expanding, it's almost like TSC's growth. I don't think we can build the buildings quick enough, the classrooms quick enough.
Who pays for the teachers who will be working here? Would it be Glass?
Glass.
But would the building principal be hiring the teacher?
We do it in coordination
right.
with
one another. As it's presently done.
Mm-hmm. And okay. additional growth, we would also coordinate okay. with one another, but we would be able to hire additional staff. Okay. One of the other things that will be able to be offered is some art instruction for preschoolers. We can manipulate the schedule to allow that. Lots of research out there that says that's very, very important mm-hmm. To students. Of course, they do lots of art in preschool also, but beyond that, the Nature Center that we have available at Cumberland could be wonderful for young children as well. There's a lot of resources just within the building. Puppetry and theater because of the LGI room. There's a lot of opportunities that can be there because of the facility.
So a wider curriculum, lower student-teacher ratios, more certified staff conceivably. I mean, that's
right. Those are the selling points.
Would these kids count in our ADS?
Works for me. Do I have some more kids?
They would at preschool, not at the way that it is now.
Preschool would
right.
not. Okay.
Right. All right. You have to do school.
But you get preschool dollars to Glass.
Yes.
And you know that increases the revenues from the budget. That could help us.
Okay.
Randy, give a quick synopsis on what your take will be over the next 5 years with regards to the state and early childhood, where you think the state might be headed with the early childhood program.
I really do think our current administration, I know that the Secretary of Education, Arne Dutkin, used to be the superintendent of the Chicago schools, and that's where his relationship with Barack Obama, and that's why Barack got him, and they were doing preschool up there at age two, full day programming. They were providing breakfast, lunch, and dinner for those children to keep them in very safe environments and very nurturing environments, and really the process of was really starting to pay off. That's their goal, that's their emphasis. And I really do think that's something that the standards are such that we have to get early intervention going with children. If you wait, you know, in the state of Indiana, the way it runs now, you technically don't have to start this kindergarten until age seven. Oh my! Believe it or not, we still have children coming at least, every once in a while at age six and seven for the first time that they enter a schoolhouse. So that those kinds of things have to change, and I really think it's an exciting early childhood is an exciting area right now. I think it's our future, and just the growth that we see in our young people. From where they begin at the beginning of the year to the end is just absolutely amazing. We've been fortunate enough to really change some things. And then the nice thing about it, you can get into some help with families, with parenting and homes, and just really work with the entire component that makes it work. So.
So, go ahead, David.
A lot of questions tonight.
That's all right.
How are
There'll be a buzzer.
How are educational outcomes measured? And what I'm wondering, I don't know if, because I don't know much about this area, frankly, but, you know, we're accustomed to measuring our educational outcomes and our performance relative to peers and that sort of thing. I mean, you know, are there like measures that are used? And
yes, there are. There's a lot of anecdotal and performance-based assessments that are done with preschoolers and young children, even our kindergartners, in terms of they show their teacher that they can do a variety of things. There also is an assessment that we're using in our early years called Dibbles, and we use that somewhat in throughout Cumberland with the children that are maybe struggling to read, but it also has potential of showing us those children that are already going quite quickly, and then there's a component to that called baby dibbles, and so that would be a component that would be part of the preschool program as well. Mm-hmm. And so there are a variety of means to track progress for young children.
We have an ISTAR KR at the kindergarten readiness, and this is something the state makes us do for all of our preschoolers. It's an assessment of about 30 proficiencies, set skills, dealing with communication, social emotional areas, adaptive behavior, gross and fine motor, and I think I'm missing out one of them, but we are responsible to do that the quarter that the student comes into our program, and then the quarter of their birthday, and then the quarter they exit. So, and that does correlate with the I-STEP. So okay. There is that whole foundations and the standards those all together. So we're responsible to the state, just like.
And that data is published against, we'll know what our benchmarks are and how we excel against the in part to
right now, ISTAR KR is primarily just with the special education populations, but they're wanting to norm reference that, and I know the state is coming to a lot of community preschools this summer and trying to see if they can get that norm reference with all students.
Okay. Could we possibly get a motion on the table to move forward with this, and then we can open for some more discussion? So, what?
I'll motion for approval of pilot program with enthusiasm.
Second. Moved by Mr. Gannett, seconded by Mrs. Rausch. Now, discussion. David.
I only have one last question. Secretary Duncan is talking, you know, they're talking, the Obama administration is talking a lot about this. Are they going to be, I don't know a lot about the preschool funding initiatives that they're proposing or whether they're far enough along in that thinking, but are there going to be dollars available to people increasingly to participate in these sort of, because right now, presumably, we're talking about a cash pay model. I mean,
your model, yes. Ours, kids with special ed, we're required to provide a program for them, but that's our responsibility. What you guys are, your future is more of a business thing, like you were talking about earlier tonight, with the opportunities of really running as a business to a certain extent.
I think there's potential.
I think there's a lot of potential. We've been crunching some numbers, so we're not making any assumptions right now.
At this point, this isn't going to cost us anything right now.
No.
If we vote yes right now on this motion, we're not going to see this on the vouchers next month of some variety.
One thing that I did mention, though, in the discussion meeting was, which I think is important, we're going to be lending our brand to this, in effect. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we want it to be successful.
Absolutely.
For lots of reasons.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But, you know, we want to make sure that things like quality control are there and that this program meets the same standards that we have with our K-12 educational services.
And it allows us to utilize rooms that, you know, full day kindergarten we were expecting. So we do have the space, and I do think that down the road we can look at combination of special ed, general ed, type of approach where you're getting revenue from the general ed population.
I mean, will we be lending the school corporation's name to us, or is it?
Well, it'll be under the...
By association, yeah.
Yeah, by association, absolutely. It'd be at the West Lafayette Community School District.
Yeah.
But we're in a co-op with GLASS, and that's TSC and Lafayette, and, you know, it's us three jointly providing a quality program for our kids countywide.
But then if we eventually move to a preschool center or something, then that would certainly be under our auspices.
I'd like to thank him and Randy. They put a lot of time and effort into this, and they really have been planning very hard on this, and I think that this has some great potential for us. So thank you guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We need all in favor. They haven't done this yet. Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Permission to apply for mid-year funding.
Here we go.
All right.
Let's see. We get some money.
Time again. As you probably recall, we borrowed money from the Indiana Bond Bank the first of the year, a little over $3.5 million at a rate of 1.79%. Some of those funds are due back June 30th, some are due December 31st. We would ask again that we be allowed to apply and see how much funding we can get from the bond bank. Our general fund, as you know, we can't borrow like we did in previous years. So we have borrowed only $783,556 this year for general fund. The bulk of our borrowing has been in capital projects, debt service, and then a smaller amount in transportation. So what we generally will do, we have cash flow forecasts that we prepare, which are unique to funding. They're prepared in a way such that it supports your need for the funds for the remainder of the year. And what I would do is bring back at the next board meeting, if you allow us to go forward with the applying, bring back what amounts bond bank says we could borrow for the remainder of the year and an expected interest rate not to exceed. And then at the same time, we would ask permission to advertise to borrow those funds. So tonight I'm just asking for permission to apply and see where we are.
Need a motion to apply for mid-year funding?
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Mr. Marley, seconded by Mr. Carpick. Discussion?
It's not a tax anticipation warrant.
I'm sorry?
It's not a TAW.
Yes,
it is. Okay.
It's just through the Indiana Bond Bank.
Through the bond.
As opposed to local.
Other questions? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. We can move forward with that. Strategic Planning Committee, Rocky.
Great introduction.
Yes.
Thank you.
It's time to try to finalize our committee, and we had 40, maybe a little over 40 parents that have volunteered to be on the planning, the strategic planning committee. And of course, we can't take all 40. Helen and Judy have worked very hard to take all the names and separate them into buckets for us. And what my recommendation is that we would take draw two names out of the Cumberland group, two names out of the Happy Hollow group, and four names out of the West Lafayette Junior Senior High School group. And those would be the parents that we would contact to invite to be on the committee. Plus, I'd recommend drawing an extra name out of each for alternates, in case someone... Yeah. And so rather than me draw, what I thought I'd do, I just pass this around, and we need four names out of this, and two names out of this, and two names out of this. So I thought I could just let each... I could just let each board member draw, but I'll follow whatever your direction is, of course.
Come and draw.
You're the man.
Total independence.
That's
all
right.
And if we had a parent that was had multiple multiple group levels, we put them into the baskets
to
try to even it out.
Do we need to approve the process?
Okay. Here's one, two, three. Four
and an alternate.
And let me write down the alternate.
I'll put an A on it.
All right, you're going to put an A. Okay. Those are from the junior, senior high school.
Do you want me to read them now?
You want to read them now?
What do you think?
Should we wait till we're all finished?
Let's wait till we're all finished. Oh, alternate.
Too happy, Hallam? Zach, you're real good at this.
Hey.
You are the man.
I know.
Here's Happy Hallam.
Okay.
Here's another one for Happy Hallam. And the alternate. Here's the alternate.
I think it's so nice that so many people wanted to be involved in this because it's a huge time commitment.
And the alternate?
This is two solid days plus another half.
Three.
Yeah, okay. Three.
Three solid days. I mean, I think this is wonderful.
One.
So many people wanted to commit to this.
I think it'll be very
two. These are Cumberland. And alternate. Thank you, Zach. Let's give Zach a hand.
Zach, great job. Okay. From the high school. Hope I can read these, pronounce these names. R-U-I-L-I-U. Reed Lou.
Is that a first name or a last name?
It's a both names.
Both names.
R-U-I-L-I-U.
Lou.
Anthony Matz. We'll keep these in case we need two. Kathleen Elliott. And Katie Bean. Okay, from Happy Hollow. Oh, the alternate. Alternate from the high school. Alternate from the high school. Coming at you. Dwight Lewis. Okay, Happy Hollow. Amy French. Just sitting right out there. And Melanie Davis.
And an alternate.
And an alternate for Happy Hollow is Eric Adams. Okay. Cumberland. We have no red carpet. Noel McGinn. McGuinn. Mm-hmm. And Hallie Gorup. And the alternate. Ryan Cabot.
What we will do, we will send the invitations out, and if anyone declines, because I went ahead and put the parent council names in, and if they're too busy, the parent council presidents, then we have an alternate, and if the alternates are busy, then we'll draw some more at the next. The strategic planning process is a committee.
Sure. I'm confused. We had two parent council presidents that were selected as parents. Are they automatically in as being parent council presidents?
No,
no.
It's
no.
Just their
okay.
Parents are okay. Parents. Yeah.
No. All right. Okay.
Yeah, we just put the parent councils in with the all the parent grouping.
Okay.
The strategic planning committee will meet June 9th, 10th, and 11th, and we have legislative, city, Purdue, Ivy Tech, local business representatives, the planning area planning commission, representatives, WLEA representatives, administration representatives, classified staff representatives, administration representatives, and school board representatives. So we're probably right now about 36, 37, and of course I'm not sure if all 37 will show up, but it's a pretty big group, and I think it's going to be a great time, and Dr. Emmerich will start the process, and we are going to follow the model for K through 12 strategic planning, in which we're going to define the vision of the school or redefine the mission of the school district, identify the goals for the school district under categories and strict curriculum and instruction, facilities, financial planning, etc. And then those goals come back to a public board meeting for your consideration and approval or fine tuning. And then committees are set up for each of the goals for action steps to develop how we're going to implement those goals over a five-year period.
And Rocky and I have talked this afternoon about the board getting together on I think it's a May 27th executive session to talk about directives that we want to set or directions we want to send to the strategic plan committee.
May 27th?
Yeah, we're going to adjust some dates at the end of this. So. Okay, we need a motion to form the strategic plan committee, I guess, move forward with it. Who wants to phrase that?
I move proceeding with the strategic planning committee process.
Second.
Moved by Mrs. Springer, seconded by Mrs. Roush, that we move forward with the strategic planning process. Further discussion. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
I'd like to thank every parent that did volunteer. I know we can't take everyone, but thank all of you that did.
And,
there's going to be action plan committees that we'll be putting together that we can call upon you.
So interesting. Okay, next item on the agenda, the revised medical consent forms.
Carol Lancaster has put together or has revised the medical consent forms, and I presented these to you for your approval. And if you have any additions, corrections, or revisions, just let me know, and I will get those back to her.
I have one question. I assume it's still done. The list of students who have medical concerns is given to teachers. Do we need to have somewhere on this that the parents are okaying, that the faculty need to be aware of?
Well, that's under FERPA. FERPA allows us to do that,
okay.
But I can make that statement.
I didn't know. Move to accept these or?
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Mr. Karpik, seconded by Mrs. Anderson, that we accept the revised health forms, emergency medication forms. Discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Retirement language provision.
The administration's been working with the WLEA leadership to put together some retirement language provision that could enable us possibly to save about $3,000 a year per teacher who would take advantage of this. Now, this is pending ratification with the WLEA, but the leadership and the administration are in tentative agreement with this, and we're recommending your approval of this restructuring, if you will. This is another one of those ideas that might help us capture some savings, depending upon how many teachers would take advantage of this. And we're recommending your approval of it pending WLEA ratification.
Let's get a motion on the table.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Mr. Karpik, seconded by Mrs. Springer, that we approve the retirement language provision. I don't know if I'm not reading this correctly, or if I am reading it correctly. How does this save the $3,000 a year per teacher?
We no longer pay the TRF contribution.
So that's it, this part right here?
Right.
Okay. Okay, I was reading.
So this is the retire, rehire thing that we had talked about earlier.
Was, was the discussion positive in nature for this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. I think that, and there's several that have been speaking with me and maybe with Mary Beth, that the same folks that are very interested in it.
Okay. But, and I guess the sick leave contribution group insurance is still through the corporation.
Right. Yeah. Okay. The savings comes through TRF.
TRF.
Yep.
And the benefit to the teachers would be they can then take their retirement benefits on top of any pay they would get as being a sort of a, I guess,
a rehired teacher.
Right.
It's almost like they're hired as a consultant, but kind of as a.
It just gives another opportunity for us to save some dollars.
Yeah.
Now, this is not going to be phrased very nicely, because I don't know how else to say it. So it's kind of like drawing two salaries.
Yeah.
Your retirement.
You're getting your quality. You're getting the what you qualify for
for your retirement.
Plus, we don't have to expend the dollars right. For the TRF contribution.
But it is your retirement money, right? Your
yeah.
Retirement salary, and then okay.
So they would get that anyway, eventually.
Well,
you know, it's the same they would always have.
The second paragraph it indicates that if they would be retired, that
okay,
that
would be delayed.
Benefits yeah. Would be delayed.
Or delayed. Yeah, right, thank you.
Oh, okay.
That's the way I'm understanding.
That she's talking about the TRF. They can still draw their TRF.
No, I was really talking what she was talking.
Oh, so you said, well, you said the retirement salary.
Oh, well, I didn't mean that.
Yeah, okay. Then yes on your...
Okay, all right.
Depends on what's the topic of conversation.
Okay, depends on what we're talking about. Okay, I'm sorry.
We're just following Indiana Code 28, 6, and 8, Indiana Code 510248. I like that.
So we're voting to approve this, the WLEA has...
Pending ratification of the WLEA.
Okay.
But this could save dollars, and this possibly could save positions.
Okay.
Depending upon how many would take advantage of this.
Okay. Okay, we have a motion on the table. All in favor of approving the retirement language provision pending ratification by WLEA? Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Oh, hard.
Yeah. We've been through a variety of revisions on that.
Yes, this has been tricky.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Textbook rental fees, K through 12, and class fees. Item F in your, and there's a revised F that's at our places tonight.
We're recommending your approval of the textbook rental fees that is at your place. This is, of course, is based upon the cost of the textbooks covered over a five-year basis. And the other fees that are associated with the classrooms and programs.
Pretty big jump for fourth grade.
Yep.
Why is that one so much higher? You know?
Higher cost.
They're extra good books this year.
Really good books this year.
Just thought I mentioned it.
They got an extra big discount last year.
I think there's some different consumables.
Different, yeah.
Katie just thought, but I'm pretty sure that they're workbooks and things. But, and they do a lot of project things also.
Yeah, yeah, we're preparing them real well for fifth grade. We'll be ready.
I can validate that.
Okay. Need a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Mr. Parfit, seconded by Mrs. Roush. That we approve the textbook rental fees and class fees K through 12 for 2009-2010. Discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
Is this actually just K through 6? Or did I miss a minute?
No, there's the West Side.
Programming.
Oh, in the back. Yeah. Never mind. Sorry.
I think we already approved it. Okay, personnel report. Oh, nope. I have an F1. Approval of variances, Happy Hollow Project.
Right. We need to have this variance contract taken care of so we can move forward with getting some information so OMS can finish their calculations. The cost would not exceed $2,100, which would come out of the general obligation line.
I move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded to approve the variances for the Happy Hollow School Project. Discussions? Discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Information to the board.
Did you do personnel? That's next.
Comes back here.
Okay. You had mentioned personnel.
I know. I just keep me on the toes.
All right. I'm just trying to say that.
No, we have no information. Personnel report revised. Item G.
Making a recommendation that you approve the personnel report, and I do want to emphasize that we have a little restructuring going on. Being that we have a technology position open, we've redrafted that. It's the instructional integration technology. Instructional technology integration specialist. That's kind of hard for me to remember which order those words go in. But We had a reduction in force of a high school teacher, and he has applied to do the portion of the It Is position for the junior senior high school. And we have a Happy Hollow teacher that's interested in doing it half-time. What this does, this allows us to save general fund dollars for part of their salaries and then take it out of capital projects because they're doing technology. So this configuration, if all our assumptions hold true that we get a flat line, et cetera, this reconfiguration could be a possibility of us helping save a staff member by us doing something like this. There's a third part of this puzzle, but I can't discuss it yet because the person that would be involved with this is finalizing everything, but it will allow us to save general fund dollars to help us to save a position, quite possibly save a position. So I just want to emphasize that to you, that that's in there. So it would be Steve Florence that would be doing the technology construction at the junior senior high school, and it'd be Kimberly Power at the Happy Hollow that would be doing half of the position for the technology. And again, we can pay that out of CPF, so that could help us. Just one of those ideas. I'm trying to give you as many ideas
rolling
as we
around.
Can. Yeah. It's like the shell game.
Move approval.
Second. Moved by Mr. Karpik, seconded by Mrs. Anderson, that we approve the personnel report. Discussion. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Board and superintendent reports, community council.
Meet this week, or meet Monday, so we have to have a meeting.
Discussion.
Meet next week.
Okay.
Discussion is next Thursday, a week from tomorrow, 4 o'clock.
Schools Education Foundation, meet tomorrow.
We do meet tomorrow, but we've also discussed the...
Yeah. Glass?
We're getting a preschool.
Health, wellness, no high ability. Legislative liaison,
I'm still talking. There's okay. A lot of talking going on and negotiating, so I'm just keeping us on their radar.
Okay,
negotiations.
We are waiting for Richard Sutton to give us some accounting of the change of insurance, since ISTA insurance has moved to United Healthcare because of a variety of financial issues. We're not sure how that's going to play out, but there'll be ongoing negotiations with the Teachers Association with regards to our insurance and if there are other ways that we can possibly reconfigure our insurance programming through either another vendor by bidding it out, et cetera. Those are all negotiated items, and we're all working together to trying to find the best insurance programming for our school district.
We have a meeting date scheduled, right?
Yeah, it's July.
Oh, it's a while.
Yeah, okay. Because Richard's working on some RFPs.
Right.
For our insurance, and it's going to take him a little while. But we may have an emergency meeting after he reads the information that we got today about the United Healthcare taking over ISTA insurance.
Park Board?
We'll meet later in the month.
Neighborhood Coalition?
I don't know the status of that.
Okay. Public Relations?
No new meetings, but we will reconvene and let the website as information here shortly.
Public Schools Foundation, typical name.
Haven't had a meeting since.
West Lafayette Purdue Community Partnership, I don't think we've met either. City Council, redevelopment, anything?
Development Commission is meeting in a couple weeks. I'm going to bring you some updated drawings of what Cumberland Road project is going to look like when it's done. So
all right, thank you. Anything else? I guess the information to the board, I forgot to say, there is an ISVA session at the Trails on the 18th, 6 p.m.
We need to RSVP to you.
Yes, we need to let Helen know if we're attending, and those are usually pretty informational for local boards. Yeah, and it's a dinner meeting, isn't it? As far as dates are concerned, Is there communication from the audience for non-agenda items? Anyone have a passing thought they want to share with us? Okay. Future meetings, was wondering if it'd be possible for a scheduling change to move the meeting on the 20th to the 27th. Have a special board meeting that would be very quick, and instead of a work session, have an executive session. That sound? To talk about strategic planning.
Is that a Tuesday?
That's Wednesday.
Wednesday. I will be out of town.
Oh, too. Well, then that's trouble.
What about another? I don't mind if you have a meeting with that.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I'm flying by instrument.
Why is this not going to work out? Because why?
I won't be able to be there.
Oh, okay.
But if you guys, if that...
What about Thursday the 21st?
We originally were scheduled for that.
I don't really know.
I think we'll be available.
Oh, I see.
I mean, it'll be fine. Just talk louder.
We're not meeting on the 28th of May, however. Rocky's going to a Cubs game.
Right, that's not
you. Well, we are not changing that date.
From the 27th on, I'll be
okay. Yeah, I think I knew that.
What about Tuesday the 26th?
Okay, the 26th. You're leaving on the 26th.
I am, because I got to turn my schedule on. I'm sorry. I can't confirm or deny anything until I get this turned on.
Okay. So. Let's go ahead and meet on the 20th, and if I can't be there, I'm just going to be there. That'll be fine.
You're going to stay with the original date?
Yeah, why don't we?
27th?
20th.
Okay.
Starting at what time?
Well, I already had that in here.
What time?
6:30 for the special board meeting, and then the executive session will be after that. So we can just talk and talk and talk and talk.
I had originally at 6 for that, so the 6:30?
6:30.
That's what I have it at.
6:30. 6:30, special board meeting, probably take about a half hour. OMS will be here to discuss Happy Hollow and the high school project.
All right.
It's executive session after.
Right.
After the work session.
After the regular special.
Oh, so there is no work
session. No work session. Right? So, anyhow, I'll be all right. As long as I get to go. I don't want to miss this one.
No, you're not going.
Okay, at strategic planning, 9th, 10th, and 11th of June, and then Wednesday, June 17th, regular board meeting.
No, we were going to suggest.
Oh, that's right.
Suggestion for the 17th is entirely up to you. I think someone will have, David will still be gone on the 17th. The superintendent's evaluation executive session was on the 24th. We could move the 17th board meeting to the 24th and just do everything one night.
That would be fine.
Will you be back then?
Yeah. We're loving that.
I'm loving that.
So you have one less meeting in June.
So it's June 24th.
So you only have one meeting in June.
On the 24th.
Because you have three people.
I'm there.
Three people are gone on the 3rd. So just do one meeting in June. That'll be the 24th. We'll have a regular or special board meeting, whatever you want to call it.
Can we move it to the 31st and 10th?
Yeah.
You're sneaky.
Because then we have I'm on the wrong year again in this stupid 16-month calendar. I hate when that happens.
Is that one all right? Yeah. 24th?
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Need a motion.
So moved.
Can we adjourn?
Is that what? That's the one.
That's what the motion you
moved
need.
Moved by Mr. Karpik, seconded by Mrs. Roush.
Mrs. Roush was on it.
Any discussion? All in favor of adjourning this meeting, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. We are adjourned.